Welcome to the first podcast in a series titled Teaching Humanity Remotely. It is the creation of Dr. Mindy Shaw, and we are with Dr. Shaw today. That title of Teaching Humanity Remotely has a little bit of an oxymoron built into it. We'll talk about that in a second. Dr. Shaw is a lifetime educator who's also the creator of a new website called Learn With Me Remotely. She's got a series of books for remote education, dealing with the social and emotional issues that children need to cover. Of course, as of this podcast, kids everywhere are having their education locations disrupted, and they are learning remotely with computers and with distance, and in some cases, hybrid education. Dr. Shaw has a lot of thoughts and feelings on the subject, and again, the name of the podcast, Teaching Humanity Remotely. The oxymoron that's built in there is that humanity is normally kind of touchy-feely, and of course the word remotely means that you are not there to be able to touch and feel. So with all of that in mind, I want to turn to Dr. Shaw to talk about this series of podcasts, Teaching Humanity Remotely. Teaching Humanity Daily was a philosophy of yours for a long time. So I wanted to talk about the title of this podcast, what it means to you, and what you're going to try and accomplish through this series.
Well, thank you so much. I'd love to do that. So one of the things that I think was unique to me as an educator was that I made sure that young children, along with all the adults that were working in the room, we really were practicing our humanity daily. And I'm going to explain that in a minute, but what I want to say is that given the fact that so many children are now having to learn remotely / virtually, I think that what they're missing the most is the ability to practice their humanity. Let's face it, kids will learn to read and write and do arithmetic. And we certainly want our children to do that. And I made sure that I had the skills to be able to be responsible to that charge when I was a teacher for over 30 years in a kindergarten and first grade class. However, what I think is the most critical is we want our children to be intelligent and to be well-rounded. And we want our children to use what the knowledge that they're going to gain in a school setting so that they can be of service in the world, so that they can be kind and compassionate and inclusive and be able to celebrate diversity and to know that even though they know a lot of things, they can always learn more things. And even though they're wonderful the way they are, they can always be better, because that's the gift of being alive, that we can always achieve more. So to me, what's missing the most in this remote learning is the ability to practice humanity daily. And I have a very strong conviction that I need to be of service. And I feel the way I can be of service to children, their families, maybe even more. The moms and dads who are now having to work at home and also make sure that their children are getting instructed at home. You know, I just feel like I have so much compassion for parents with all of the responsibilities that they have today that I... And the thing about this humanity building in the school setting, in primary grades, children, let's say, learn, if they want to get a crayon, that they may need to, in my classroom, we share everything. So if somebody wanted crayons, they would have to say, so-and-so, can you please pass me the crayons? And then that person would pass the crayons, and then they would get to say, thank you. And then that other person would say, you're welcome. Where are you going to do that? When both parents are working and it's stressful, where are we going to have our children practice? Well, we're going to have to do it at the dinner table now. And even though there's less time in the day for what's needed in a family, somehow this time needs to be made. And this is where parents are going to need to teach the most. This is where what the children are missing in school, the parents are going to need to somehow be able to, you know, make sure that they take the time as a family, even though it's very overwhelming, to make sure that there are daily living skills that are getting taught that will really increase and develop in a healthy way one's humanity.
I'm glad you brought up the example of the child asking politely for the crayons, because I was looking for some clarification on what learning humanity or teaching humanity really means. Is it manners? Is it emotions? Is it interpersonal behavior? Maybe you can give me two or three examples of things that happened with students of yours over the years that demonstrate what it means to teach or learn humanity.
I love that question. Thank you so much. One thing I want to say is when I was thinking about my title for my podcast and also for my website, I was thinking, it's not really, I'm not teaching directly the way a teacher teaches directly in a classroom and the way parents are their children's first teachers. And I really also wanted to say, I feel one of the things that we could be doing to parents in our day and age with our culture in the current climate is we can really make them feel like they're never doing enough. And that is not how I want anyone to feel. As a matter of fact, I'm motivated to do the podcast to really be partners with parents, as I feel all teachers should be partners with their parents, because parents really are the greatest teachers to their children, and we need to honor them. So I created this just as a side note to make it very easy, simple, to be able to practice. And I was thinking about the title, and here's what I came up with, and it was really kind of a surprising discovery for myself. What makes human beings human? Now, they're very smart animals, so in that way, we're the same. You know, we can be very smart animals, too. And I definitely feel like, you know, I have a dog. I love my dog. My children love the dog. We all love the dog. It feels like the dog loves us. So I definitely think there's some emotions even in animals. But I don't know to what extent. And I don't know the kind of complexities that animals feel. But I will say that human beings, their feelings and their emotions are very complex. And I feel when I say practice humanity daily, I really am, in retrospect and in reflection, really talking about how do we teach young children to express their feelings, some feelings that might seem very negative, such as anger or fear or sadness. How do we teach them to express those feelings that are as true as any other more positive feelings? How do we not only teach them to express the feelings, but also not see them as negative? Because, you know, there's a sense of fear, although it could be very paralyzing, in which case it would be very negative, it could be very illuminating to make sure that we're careful. And we want, you know, so to me, teaching humanity daily really was about practicing our expression of our feelings in a way that wouldn't do any harm to anyone and only do good.
Nice. So back to the question of examples, are there some true-to-life stories that come from your long experience of teaching?
So I'm really glad that you asked this question, because I want to share three examples about the first day of my class every year for 30 years. So let me first explain my program. I was a kindergarten first grade teacher, and I had about 20 students. So that means that half of the class were in one grade and half of the other. So it was a two-year program. Let me just say as a side note, what I loved about that program was that the relationships immediately became authentic and real, because there wasn't this artificial, you know, 10-month kind of relationship that a teacher and a student and family has. So I loved the fact that it was a two-year program. Really fantastic. And I also loved the fact that, you know, we learn from each other, and we learn from each other even when we're really little. We're teachers and we're learners, and we're all in it together. And so having the multi-age classroom allowed the children to really learn how much they can teach, as well as learn. If, for example, let's say a student needed a little extra time, you could have extra time in this class because nobody really knew or cared. It was a two-year program. Let's say you were accelerated, you could be accelerated because it was a two-year program, and there'd always be some other child that you could learn with. And I think that the best learning has a social element to it, which is another reason I think learning remotely is so difficult for children, so frustrating that they're not getting to have that social interaction that's so, you know, I think we crave it as humans. I think those quality relationships allow us to grow and take risks and expand, and I think they're really necessary. So, you know, I think that the socialization is very, very important. So here are the things that I did on the first day of school. Well, the very first thing I did was I had a preschool picnic. And the reason I did the preschool picnic was that half of the families already knew me. And I worked in a district that didn't allow parents to have choice of who the teacher should be. And I think parents should have complete choice. What is more important than you making the right decision? You're happy with your child's education. That child's going to be happy and that teacher's going to be happy. And as again, we're all partners. So I'd have a before school picnic and I thought to myself, even if the parents were a little uncomfortable and they didn't know me, they would see that the children who were coming back for their second year, they loved me. And that, you know, I'm very into the golden rule. So treat others the way, you know, I want to be treated, in which case I'm going to make sure that parents feel safe while they're sending their children to kindergarten for the first year. So that was before school even started. I had a preschool picnic. Then on the first day of school, the first thing we would do is my classroom was set up. We were all in circles all the time. And I did that because it helped me to always be part of the gang. I was in the middle of everything. I could see everywhere. So it was like functionally great, but it was also, it created a kind of environment that was like friendly. It was almost like being, you know, having dinner with your family. It was just with more people, you know? Anyway, so we sat in a circle and I said to them, boys and girls, do you think that everyone deserves to be accepted, included, and feel safe in your learning environment, in this learning environment that is ours? And I said, you know, and before you answer, let me make sure that we understand every term that I'm using. So we did that. And here's the thing that's so fascinating. And this is, I want adults to really hear what I'm saying here. This part's really important because it's a learning lesson I had over and over and over again as I was with this age group every single day for so many days of my life. 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old children, they are so smart. Guess what? They know the difference between right and wrong. There's no mistaking that. We do not need to be dumbing it down when we speak with our children. We do not need to not be completely honest with them. They're smart. They know the difference between right and wrong. They want to be asked. They are much more in a particular kind of way because of their youth. They're so much more open about their feelings and what they think is right or wrong and how they can express themselves. They need a little guidance, but they're there already. As we get older, we get much more close to that, which is why some of these topics could be hard for grown-ups. Children are already ready. They want to talk about it. They like talking about themselves and they like talking about their feelings. And we just all need to learn the language together and give each other the skills so the conversation could be productive. So on the first day of school, I would ask that essential question. And guess what? I'd go around, whether I had 21 children, 23, 25, 18, every single child in that classroom said yes. In fact, I deserve to feel safe, included, and accepted in this classroom. So then I would say, well, if you think that and you feel that, then you need to show it because you need to match your feelings and your thoughts and your actions. That's what make you true. What's another word for true? Being honest, right? So what does it look like? And then we would talk about that. So then I would say, now that we've all made this agreement and we all know what it looks like and we all want to be true, making sure that our actions match our words and our thoughts and our feelings, we're not going to leave anyone out. We're not going to hurt someone's feelings. No one's going to give us a put down because it won't be safe if we're put down. And lo and behold, we're not going to have any behavior problems because guess what? Behavior equals need, and we're going to get our needs met. That was the first day. That was the first day that was in the first hour of meeting my new class every single year for 30 years. Then the second thing I did is I read a book called The Little Engine That Could. And The Little Engine That Could is, the moral of that story is that if you think you can, you can. So I would say, you know, boys and girls, in this class, we are all readers and writers. And some of you, when you read, you might read a chapter book. And some of you might just look at the pictures. And some of you might read simple books. And some of you might read harder books. And when you write, some of you might scribble. Some might draw. Some might write the first letter of a word, the last letter. Some might write many words. Some might write sentences. All that matters is I see you as readers and writers. And it's my job to make sure you see yourself as readers and writers. And so this is the deal. sometimes when you're learning something hard, like reading and writing or anything, your first instinct might be to say, I can't do it. I can't do it. But you know, what would have happened if that little engine said I couldn't do it? The boys and girls on the other side of the mountain wouldn't get the good food to eat or toys to play with. So I'm asking you to say, when you meet something that's difficult, to say, I think I can. And when you forget, because we all forget sometimes, we're just going to gently remind each other that, you know, we can. So that was another agreement. And then we talked about agreements. And if you make an agreement, it's really a commitment. So those were the two things that we did on the very first day of school. And then what came from that is that parents would say to me, wow, you know, like my child's sounding like you in their home. And I'm like, and I'm sounding like their child, you know. Very mutual.
Right. So you spoke a moment ago about speaking very honestly. Almost, you didn't use the word maturely, but speaking in a mature fashion to young children as you're going through this educational process. And I can't help but connect that thought to the series of books that you've developed. For people listening to the podcast, there are books by Dr. Mindy Shaw. There are 40, and a list is growing, 40 short ebooks on the Kindle website through Amazon, and then there are a number of paperbacks that combine several of the stories that are single ebooks into paperback books that you can grab at home and use with the kids and put on the bookshelf. But they are nonfiction books. They are books that, as you peruse the titles, you see words like fear and courage and sorry and mad. And as I've looked into the content of these books, they are very direct, honest. I call them nonfiction, but beyond being nonfiction, they are speaking to children about emotional issues. And I came across a term recently, socio-emotional learning, which was a new term for me, but I guess has been something in education for a little while. So maybe you could talk about the books, how they're set up, and what the purpose of the message and the learning of the books is all about.
So thank you. So I was inspired to write the books for two reasons. One was my granddaughter, my oldest granddaughter named Olivia, she was about 4 years old, and as you know, if you have, you know, a 3 or 4 or 5 year old child, you know this is true. They ask a lot of questions, and she was asking a lot of questions. And her questions at that point were why this, why that, why this, you know. And then it became how. So it and we would really talk. And one time she was around 4, and I gave her a ride on my shoulders, and it was, this was a very magical moment for me as her grandmother, she calls me Min Min. She said, Min Min, I like when you speak to me. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, she's young. And I like speaking to her. And I let her know that. And it was just a magical moment that, again, it's why working with children is, it's really kind of easier than working with adults. But I do want to just say one thing about that, not necessarily for parents. I have a doctorate in education, and I have degrees in special and regular education, and a degree in reading recovery. And when my daughter was a struggling reader, I was not the best teacher for her. As a parent, we're too emotional, too identified. We take it too personally. There's too many feelings that really get in the way, and that's why you're not supposed to be doing this. And so I am not going to review how you should be teaching reading and writing and arithmetic, because I don't think that's really your charge. I am trying to offer assistance, and these books, which I'll address the depth of them in a moment, these books can offer assistance. And I think, for me personally, there's something really sweet about being able to read them again and again and have them on the bookshelf and being able to, when an issue arises, take them down. So the books were inspiration based on my 30 years of teaching experience in practicing our humanity daily, in teaching children how to identify their feelings, respect, validate, and honor their feelings. Expect that grown-ups will also respect and validate and honor these feelings as long as they're expressed appropriately. If you're angry and you curse at me, I will not respect you. If you're angry and you throw something at me or bite me, I will not respect you. You're not responding in a way that is responsible enough to be respected. But if you share an angry feeling or sadness because there's death in the family or the death of a pet, or you feel jealous because a sibling is born, I'm going to teach you that those feelings are, they're your feelings and they're appropriate. Expressing yourself in a negative way is not appropriate. You can't hit someone, bully somebody, but you can have your feelings, and together we're going to learn how to express those feelings so you can get them out and actually then be a teacher to show others how to express difficult feelings in a positive way, because that's, again, it's all about service. So I feel inspired to be of service, and I model that for the children in my charge. I want them to feel that. So the books, there are about 20 books that are just one word, you know, an emotion: anger, fear, love, happy, joy, optimism, confident, worry, anxiety, you know, things that children, feelings that children feel, shame. That's one of my favorites. It speaks to the fact that in my classroom, we never had erasers. We never had erasers because we want to celebrate. The mistake lets us know what the next learning lesson is. And if we spend all of our time erasing the mistake, you don't have enough energy. We are what we pay attention to. We're not going to have enough attention. Children have short attention spans. So I don't want them to be paying attention to the mistake. I want them to be celebrating the learning lesson, and that the mistake lets the teacher know or the grown-up know what needs to be taught next. So I love that book. And I have to say, the question that came to mind always about shame is, why does a child who is coming into a classroom who's only four have shame, feel embarrassed when there's a mistake, when the baby is learning how to walk, just falls, gets up, falls, gets up. Every fall is an inspiration for the next getting up, you know. So it just led to a lot of thought on my part, reflection. And so each book has a little story. You know, maybe a lot of the books have to do with Olivia asking me a question or me wanting to point something out to her. And so we have a dialogue, and we have a little story around the dialogue about all these different feelings. And then there's talking points. And the talking points really are for the parents to speak with their children in an ongoing way. You read the book, you go to bed, the next day you have dinner, you talk about the same subject. If you feel like that subject is really been spoken about enough, and everything is running smoothly in the area of your child expressing anger, for example, then, you know, everything's copacetic, and then all of a sudden your child gets really angry. That night when you go to bed, you might say, hey, Jimmy, you want to take that book out about anger? Let's talk about that again. So it's really something to refer to. And the school districts are being required now to have half of the reading needs of the children be nonfiction in very primary grades, kindergarten, first grade, second grade. Lots of states are asking for that. And they're also working at having a social-emotional curriculum. So I feel like this addresses the social-emotional curriculum in depth, as well as helping parents who are now having to do this part. Because this part, the social-emotional part, I don't see how that can really happen virtually. So that is a place where I think parents do need to pick it up. And instead of seeing it as another burden, you know, maybe you already read to your child at the end of the night. So this is just another book. A few of the books are actually stories, like real events. Like one was about when I was a teacher, there was a student in my class who had Down syndrome, and another student who was the most popular student, that was her best friend. And that's very sweet, and it teaches us about inclusion and acceptance of our differences. There's another real story about a new child who comes into a classroom and another child championing that child. And that's really beautiful and teaches us about also inclusion and also making sure we are not discriminatory based on what someone looks like. And then there are other just life lessons, such as how do you learn to take turns, the birth of a sibling, the coronavirus from a kindergartner's concern. My granddaughter came home one day and she started crying and she said, Mommy, Mommy, I'm really sad and I'm worried. And her mother said, what are you worried about? And she said, well, you know, I'm going to have to go to kindergarten with a mask on and I won't be able to eat lunch. And so that's the story. That I'm so glad she's able to articulate that. A lot of children may feel afraid, they don't know why. I mean, certainly grown-ups, we have a lot of feelings, we don't understand them. So if we can teach them and explore with our children, it's actually going to help us too. And I do want to say these books are very simple, and the simplicity allows for really time management. I'm all about time management. I don't want parents to have another burden. I want them to get the most out of these books, so they're getting the story read to them, they're getting the learning lesson, they're getting the skills, they're getting the language. And even though all of that is for the parent, many children can read these books. They're simple. So maybe not a kindergartner, but you know, some certainly a second grader can read the books on their own, and maybe some first graders can, or maybe you can share the book, one page to the parent, one page for the child. So the books are really in answer to a call to help fulfill a lot of requirements, but mostly, you know, for me to feel like I'm being of service, continuing my vision that we are all partners in our children's education. You know, this is what I think I could be contributing, and this is how I feel I could be helpful, and this is the remote learning that I can offer. Again, it's not reading, it's not writing, although I did that well. It's really about having a platform to be able to share all that I've learned in regard to teaching humanity and having children practice them. And I would say that I'm equating that with social emotional lessons and growth.
Dr. Mindy Shaw has been sharing some of her philosophy and thoughts with us. This is the first podcast in her series. I think families all across America and the world would be fortunate to have Dr. Shaw reaching into their lives from long distance via her books, via this podcast. This podcast is more for the parents, I would think, than for the children to listen to. The books are for sharing between parents and kids. And the books, again, are a series of Kindle ebooks with individual stories that are on the Amazon Kindle website and also combined into 3- and 4-story paperbacks, also on Amazon.com, all under Dr. Mindy Shaw. Dr. Shaw's website is learnwithmeremotely.com. And I really look forward to future podcasts listening to you, talking about your philosophy, talking about educating kids of that certain age, a very important age in the education process. And maybe on some future podcasts, you'll take some of the individual books and break them down a little bit and talk about their subject matter, because it's really fascinating stuff and something I think people don't think about. They are profound in their simplicity, and you're to be congratulated on that and the launch of your podcast.
Thank you so much. My great pleasure.